On this week's show, should ERPs be focused on pre-construction? With Don Tiefenbrunn and Steve Botts from RM1. All right, we're back. Don, I'm going to start with you. Looking good, enjoying. Where are you coming to us from today?
I'm in Sonoma, California this morning.
Let me guess, what is it, like 68? And it's still morning, so it's probably like 60, 64.
Yeah, it's mid-60s.
Not 68 and sunny yet.
Yeah, it's sunny out.
I love that weather.
The grapevines are just starting to turn, getting a little color in the fields. But it's a beautiful time of year. All right.
Yeah, see? Yeah, Steve, you're with me, man. I have to talk to these people. Now, I can't say anything because I am in the mountains of Colorado, so it is cold here, but I am in the mountains, so I always feel as though I have a little. I can't throw too many stones. But if I had two places to be, man, it'd be here and on the beach or near you in California, man. Two places I love to be. Steve, you're the one suffering and traveling. Where are you today?
I bet you can't guess, you know, where I am based on my cool background.
Based on the cool background, you might be at a something work or something. One of these things. I don't know. There we go.
Yeah, you nailed it. Yeah. You happen to be on the road today in D.C., but I live in Texas, and I'm from the Northeast, though. So it's nice getting a little bit of actual fall.
Yeah, isn't that nice? Like, they have seasons.
Yeah.
We have two. We have construction and winter. That's it.
Exactly.
Seasons are interesting. But hey, listen, you're going to learn more about these guys, and I know you're going to want to tune in for this because this is going to be a really fun episode. Before we do, though, you know, we're on YouTube. Check us out, youtube.com/@TheContectCrew. Follow us on social media, connect with the guests, connect with me, follow the Contect Crew LinkedIn page too. We're putting a lot more of the shorts out over there, trying to beat that algorithm. So help me out and check it out over there. And if you aren't following us on LinkedIn, you better. Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the Contect Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@thecontectcrew.com to learn more. So, we got two people from RM1. Now, you guys know, usually it's me and a host, and it's two-on-one to the guest. But I said, when I talked to Steve, let's flip this and have a little fun with the two of them. Come on, because I think you guys are going to enjoy this. So, I want to start with you, Don, because you know, the focus of this is really around the RM1, but it's always the people and the problem. So give our audience a little background on you real quick.
I started my career like 35, 40 years ago. I started as an architect. I got my degree from Kansas State University, my undergrad. Anyway, I practiced as an architect for about 12 years, and all I was doing was paper architecture. And I really wanted to know how to build things, because all I did was the high-end design, and I was fortunate to be traveling all over the Pacific Rim. I worked in the airport in South Korea. I was working in Hong Kong. I go to the Philippines to work on the airport after the volcano blew it all up, and I was very fortunate. I learned a lot early on and worked on some hospitals in Kuala Lumpur. But then I wanted to know how to build things. I got a job at a GC, loved the process of construction and getting into it. I started a pre-construction department at the first GC I worked at, and then moved on to another company, which was BCCI Construction. Well, I took over their pre-construction and advanced it, and then I took over all of the structures projects at the company, which were the larger, more difficult projects to, you know, collect the data and build out, because it was always quite challenging. But anyway, the whole process for us was back in 2014, we needed to look at how to improve our entire organization and the workflow, the data. We needed a new project management software system. So we started with that. And some of our goals were, how do we not input data into every single program for every single department in the company? And how can we transfer the same information through its life cycle from business development through marketing, all the way through the field and construction to close out. We started to work with Procore at the time when they were just opening up. So we became a good collaborator with them. We hired a CTO that helped us, Cebu, advance everything internally. And Cebu and I became good friends. And through our discovery, you know, I kept telling him that there's nothing out there that addresses pre-construction. There's no, everybody cares about managing the construction project, but nobody cares about setting up the job for success. And there's no program other than Excel, and everybody used Excel to track everything. And there's just thousands of data points that you needed to track. So we decided that that probably would be a good starting point for us to build out our own program. And we quickly decided that it made more sense to build out an entire ERP system and have one platform that every department and all the people in the company could utilize and pull data from. So we looked at setting up the RM1 product. It had a few names over the years. So anyway, we developed our own internal CRM product within the RM1 as a separate module. And we began to track all of our clients, all of our contacts, everybody that touched a project. And that way our marketing department and our BD department could get what they needed out of it. And then we started to build a project database of all the jobs that were in pre-construction and started to collect all the data points that were attributed to that starting up a job successfully. And then you could manage from day one, you could assign anybody on the project internally that was working on it. And we had workflows. We have workflows. So we had our hands on now of a product that everyone in the organization could use in some form and collect and add data to it. We used it to assign not only the team, the internal teams, but you could also assign and track what architects, what engineers, who's the collaboration partners. We could track what subcontractors worked on those jobs. So you have a complete history of what's going on. And we carry this data through closeout of the project. So what's good for us is that, you know, we have APIs that connected to other programs, and we could pull, while we were building the product out, we could collect the data from the other programs and push data to them if we wanted to. So it became full circle that we would assign job numbers just for estimating jobs. And then once it became a project, you know, it would have a project number to go to finance. But we had a full life cycle product moving along at that time.
You built it in-house, so it gave you sort of a visibility, and you were solving problems. Like, you looked at this whole problem, went out and started looking at the hardest ones, and said, oh, wait, somebody's got some of that. But really, we need to begin with the end in mind and start in pre-construction, right? That's the key. If you're setting up thousands of jobs a year, hundreds to hundreds or thousands, there's a lot of room for error in there and a lot of room for rework and a lot of duplicate entry. A lot of companies could save a lot of time by thinking through the process of how many places you put the same information in. And not to mention just the fact that you break it when you do that, right? You have, yeah. If a human's involved, there's a high chance, sorry guys, but that you're going to input it wrong, that it's going to be wrong.
Yeah.
So Steve, give a little background, because you are now over on the team, but you met Don on the team along the way and came from the other side. So give a little background on you.
Thanks, Jeff. We're excited to be here. So yeah, I mean, my background's mostly been in tech, and I think like a lot of people in and around maybe real estate and construction, I kind of fell into real estate and construction tech. So funny enough, my first job out of college was working with a design build company called Schneider Electric, doing energy retrofit projects for like schools and municipalities. So did have a little bit of a stint in the BD side of construction, but I was at a company called Honest Buildings. We did like CapEx and TI tracking and management, which were acquired by Procore in 2019. And then for the last 6 years, I was at a company called Jones that does insurance compliance software, kind of leveraging AI. So the relevant part of my background is I spent most of my time working with real estate and construction companies, you know, trying to implement technology. And I met Don and the team over the summer. And, you know, being in tech, I'm sure you can appreciate this, but, you know, it was an interesting and contrast for me. I'm always looking at like, you know, who are the people, what's the problem, and then like, what's the product, right? And, you know, it's rare to come across a team of folks that have had this entire experience and career living and breathing construction, right? And living and breathing the problems and then building their own solution and then saying, hey, you know what, like, we'd really love to sort of share this with the industry. So it was a cool opportunity, and it's been great to work with the guys. And so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you hit on a couple interesting threads, because that's something we see some of the incubators that are built in the construction industry by construction companies. You know, there's plenty of them out there who have their own investment arms, have their own arms for doing those things. But most of those are, you know, they'll run an incubator and bring them in, select one, bring them in, build it. This was born and bred from the problem itself. And you lived and breathed it. I mean, how long, Don, did you guys live and breathe and develop the product before you even got to the point you're at now?
I would say it took us about 2 years to set up the product until the first day we started using it. And then we just started updating versions of the product. Like every 3 or 4 months, we would update the product. And we would just add additional features and things to advance the product along the way. So, and that became a natural cycle for a few years where we just kept up with this, you know, 3 or 4 times a year, the product was updated. And, you know, we would do a lot of testing before then and advancement. But for us, that worked out perfectly. It wasn't an extreme amount of change, so it didn't confuse the users. You know, I would create tutorials and do one-on-ones or group. Every time there was a new version of the product, you know, I just set up meetings, rolled it out to everybody, and just went through the bullet points. These are the 5 things that are most unique that'll help you, you know, make your day happier. So people were really excited about, you know, and collectively getting feedback from in real time from everybody every day. You know, we had this huge list of wishes and desires and the what ifs. You know, if you had a magic wands and if you had the perfect world, what would it be? So a lot of people, you know, were really excited about feeding us their ideas and thoughts, and it was great.
Yeah, this is awesome. Cause I mean, Steve, this has to hit different because both of us come from that background. We usually don't come across a product that's had such, you just talked, the way you talked about it, Don, you didn't say it, but it's change management, right? You were prioritizing the business problems. It's an internal product, internal business problems, limiting the amount of change. You set it in there without saying it. Like, we can't overkill them with change. You're, you know, building and understanding the adoption. Like, Steve, we don't get that in our world. Usually it's, you know, we've built it. Do you like it? What? And you're trying to get that, and you're doing your best to get that feedback loop, but this has to be a different experience.
100%. It's like, it's funny because I've worked on a lot of different products and really, you know, one amazing experiences and products and worked a lot of customers. But, you know, when I first got into RM1, you can tell that they've, you know, there's a different perspective when you're building it from like the real world, right? When you're working with product managers and they're building stuff and they're computer science majors or product managers, you know, not necessarily from the industry, the nuance of like of the way that the project will work in the real world sometimes gets lost. So like, you know, when you get to the end of a workflow and there's an automatic communication to like a distribution network, right? And it's funny, like talking to some of our customers, you know, and against the backdrop of like AI and all of this exciting stuff, like you'll be like, well, what's the most valuable thing? That's, well, when we execute this one function, it sends a notification to this distribution channel of all of our operations folks, and then they start going and doing work, and they know that that's their cue to go and start executing. And it's like very simple, pragmatic things that, you know, help with the utility of the platform, but you can tell it's like got, you know, a little bit more of like a craftsman sort of like approach.
Yeah. And I'll just help you in your marketing. You could say it's an AI driven workflow that generates an alert. You mean it creates an email and we've been doing it forever. You just put AI in front of it. Come on. I'm with you though. I love that. Cause John, that's the functional part of like, again, eating your own dog food. You solved real problems,
right?
Did it, whether you guys knew it or not, I don't know, that you were doing a really sound, solid change management process and adoption, creating a true adoption curve that can be sustained and also, you know, move the needle for the company.
Yeah, we knew that. We could see the results. You know, we could issue reports to every department, wanted a different report. Everybody wanted different information. For the first time, we were able to not use an Excel sheet and send out weekly reports telling everybody what jobs we won, what jobs we lost, what jobs are currently profitable, what are the projections? Because we're about, and this pre-construction platform is about projecting the possible future and how do we control the scenarios currently that can lead us to the most profitable and successful project.
You know, we're not stopping this call right now, but I would love to just say, you know, at the end, I'm going to reiterate this. Don said, you can do it without Excel.
Yes.
I don't know a place that believes me quite yet, but yeah. You heard him say it. It wasn't just me. Excel is not your ERP system or your estimating system or your other system or your reporting system. It is a manipulation tool for data, which is great because you can play around with things and have fun with it. But I love that.
We love to import from Excel from every other program. We love that part.
Exactly. Right. Now let's talk about the big decision. You know, you're going to open up the world to this. This could have run, you know, BCCI and whoever else may have been using it, but you decided to go commercial with it. What was that process like for you, Don?
We sold my construction company, BCCI, that I was with. So I knew that I had a short-term run to get out. So that was my exit strategy because I had to stay 4 years. And I knew I wanted to commit myself to the RM1 advancement. So, you know, for me, it was like perfect timing because I believed that we were able to continue to use RM1 internally to manage our business as we had. And we could advance it to other companies that we were working with as well at the time. So we explored that. And basically, during the pandemic, I would say around 2000, 2001, it solidified the fact that we need to go global with this product. We could sell it everywhere. Everybody needs something like this. And so we rebranded the product. We hired a company to help us with the branding, with the marketing, putting new websites together. This is our second version of a website. But, you know, getting the marketing and getting the bones of the product that we didn't have before, we didn't need to do any of that. And now we needed to build a business. So, you know, we had to create contracts. We had to create contract forms. Basically, anything you need to do to set up a business, we had to do in the last couple of years. We had a product. We had a tested product with a track record. We had one client. So we felt it was worth it to move forward. We know we've got everything we have in place to be successful.
Yeah, you had to do some of that. It's really funny. You know, sort of the backwards way to do it, but it's the better way to do it in many respects. Like, I mean, Steve, you've had this experience too, where we're like sitting on vaporware trying to get it out there. And this is the beautiful, like, hey, we have this great foundation. It's a product that works. It's solid. We know it works. We know it's run companies. Now let's give it a facelift and let's give it a look out into the market. And that's where you jumped on as well. And talk a little bit about how excited you are for this next portion. Why do you think this is important for the rest of the industry to get access to?
I think that going back to that, like, people problem product, right? Like, construction is essential to everything that we do, right? We have to build stuff. I mean, everywhere you look, we're building data centers, you got to build homes, you got to build infrastructure, right? Like, it's so critical to what we do. And it's not that there's a lack of technology. I mean, there's technology everywhere, but like practical solutions that work for companies and can meet them where they are. I think like that's, you know, probably that's really at the end of the day, what these companies want, right? They don't need the new AI version of this or the AI version of that. They need things that actually help them do their jobs better. And when I talked, first met with Don and Mike and Cebu, you know, they were just coming from this really practical place of like, listen, we live these problems. We built the solution to solve it. We know other people are dealing with this. And like, we really think that we can help this. We just think that this is a good product that can go out and help other people solve. And just, it was kind of a refreshing, you know, point of view to hear. And so like, they clearly used it. They clearly believed in it, had poured their kind of blood, sweat, and tears into it. So, you know, for me to come in here and say, you know, hey, I'm happy to help you, you know, take what you've done and sort of bring it out to the market. You know, it seemed like an easy thing. And when he talks about it, but like, you really, really are passionate about like pre-construction and forecasting and resource management and like helping you companies approach that problem a little bit better. And so I thought that like just came through in the conversations that we had had.
Yeah. I mean, it comes through talking to Don now and talking to you now. You've said this a couple of times, like, we live these problems. We haven't even, we talked a little bit about a CRM. There's lots more in it now. But you just keep focusing on the problems because you lived them, you fixed them. not fixed them, but you approached them in a way that's like, listen, this is what we want to get done. And we think there's a better way than all of our Excel spreadsheets. So we're going to keep building this in until it's an operating machine that works for you. And that's something that's just lacking. And I'll ask about it, but like from a funding perspective and from a growth perspective, like what's your philosophy, Don, and how are you guys approaching this as you come into the market?
As far as the funding aspect of it, there is no outside funding. We don't have any angel fund investors. We don't have, there's no VC money involved. We haven't gone around the world trying to find people that want to give us money. We built it with our own collateral, and the owners of the company, you know, made their own personal investments in the product because we believed in it. I know we believed that we could do it. And another key initiative we had early on around 2019, when we decided that we needed to take this public, was that it's the price point. So many of the products out there, the pricing structure is way out of whack with what you're getting as an end result. So we felt that if we can control our costs internally and roll this product out without a heavy burden, the cost point, it needs to help the small companies that are, 20 million and up, 50 million and up. You know, once you get beyond, I don't know, like 30 people, you collect a lot of data, and there's a lot of advantages about having a simple program and a process that you can retain all that data. So
when I met with Don, and he was talking to me, he's like, he said this thing like, pre-construction, it's not just like the phase of pre-construction. It could be every single thing that happens from you start tracking a lead, right? And you've got business development folks, you've got marketing folks, you've got, people working on these projects. And then the other big component of this that our chairman Mike would talk about is like, what is your NCO, right? And NCO is a term that maybe was relevant to BCCI, but like your non-chargeable costs. Because all of this goes into that number. And a lot of those firms, they might know this. They might be like managing it by their gut, right? But they don't necessarily have a way to really calculate and optimize this. And the world of construction and the margins that you deal with, right? Like making these, being able to have a more reliable way to manage and measure your non-job chargeable costs and your allocations. That's really where you can actually start to control costs. Like one interesting anecdote, as I was talking to some of our existing customers, right? I was asking like, hey, what's been a really impactful feature? And they were like, well, like, to be honest, this communication that goes out that triggers everybody to start taking action once we know we're going to go award the bid. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. But then as they kept talking, they said, well, what ended up happening was we would create a budget for pre-construction, right? And that's where all of the hours for the project would get built. But sometimes those budgets wouldn't get closed out just because, things are moving around, something would happen. And all of a sudden, more and more overheads getting charged to a project than it needs to be because we've already moved out of this pre-construction phase. And just by closing the gap from that notification going out to somebody closing out a budget in CMIC saves the company overhead. And so it's like one of those examples where it's like, I'm sure that a lot of GCs and a lot of folks can probably say, oh, we've had situations where something like that's happened, right? Like a project budget stays open. And those are the types of things that can really hurt the profitability of a project or multiple projects.
You nailed it, because these bigger companies, right, they have an ability and sort of a built-in ability to absorb some of that. And I love that you guys both said we got to go for the smaller contractors, because Steve, earlier when you talked about this, you said, yeah, we've got hyperscalers to build and data centers and chip manufacturers, et cetera. But we also have houses, and we have an electrical grid, and we have, all sorts of infrastructure things that we need to build that are going to be built by $20 to $50 million contractors, $100 million contractors, that right now their margins are so slim, and they don't see this and manage and measure those non-job costed pieces. And that's your profit erosion, right? That's where you erode your profit and wonder like, I'm killing it on these jobs. If I'm looking at the jobs I won't say this, it's not mean to Procore, but in a Procore bubble, just in a project management bubble, like, look, I did great. But that's because we're not taking into account all the other areas around it that are costing us money and eroding that profit. And a $20 million contractor that experiences that on a, they could be out of business, and we don't want them out of business. We need them in business working and focused on jobs, not focused on these kinds of problems. So it's really cool to see that it's built on the back of large industry, right? That's where you guys came from. But you said, listen, we're not the only ones. We know there's only, you know, they call it the ENR top 100 for a reason. It's only 100 of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do the math. There's thousands of GCs and trades and others out there beyond that.
I mean, Don, you talked a little bit about, like, when I came on, about the things, you know, in the pre-construction, that just having more structure on and knowing so that you know, like, whether it's go, no go, right? And we all have the names, but you mentioned a tech retailer, for instance, right? Like, and I think that's like a good example, if you remember that story, that really like epitomizes like making decisions of pre-con.
We're more than tracking who's on the bench, because a lot of companies, you know who's going to be sitting on the bench before or after a job starts or closes. But understanding your true overhead and where your overhead is being spent is what people aren't doing. And if you're charging, or you're spending a lot of hours on projects and pre-con to set it up, you know, I told Steve this story about a couple of our retail or clients. Anyway, you would spend an enormous amount of effort. You know, you would spend a year in pre-construction and not get paid a penny. And so you might spend, let's say, $500,000 on your estimators and project management, your superintendents to do site investigations. So you're spending thousands of hours that you don't get paid for. And the project's only 4 months long. You know, you've already long spent that money of your profit a year ago, and you'll never recover it. But it's a repeat client, and you have the obligation to still build the job. And when you're negotiating a job with a client, you know, it's tough, because most clients don't appreciate the value of all the time and effort that go into your value engineering. We value engineer everything, but, you know, it's not value reduction. We spend time creating new ideas and new ways to build something to maintain their initial concept. You know, we know the program. We know what has to be done to make the job successful, so that when the job is completed, everybody walks away happy with the results. But we should be getting paid for that. But we don't, unfortunately, in the general contracting world. And a pre-construction contract and getting paid for pre-construction is still extremely rare, especially on smaller scale jobs. And it's just an unfortunate fact that most owners don't understand. And they just believe that contractors are out to gouge them on everything. And it's really, you know, it's the perception is wrong, because the value of what most GCs are offering is extremely high. You're giving them a lot of service that you're never getting charged for. The design team is getting paid the whole time to develop a permit set of drawings, and you're alongside them developing those drawings with them. I was out there every detail on a job, the waterproofing detail, the stair detail, elevator shafts, you know, checking it all, making sure, you know, I'd point out, I was redlining and clouding with my blue beam and showing them what was not working, what detail needed to be fixed. You know, there's an extreme amount of value there. And I have to say that, you know, clients just don't get it. So that's why we're doing this, because we need to be able to make the pre-construction costs and scope as black and white as possible, so that the owners of a company can make good decisions on where to invest their time and money as you move forward, and projecting where you're going and forecasting what the potential outcomes can be. It's very empowering, I think, for leadership to know these facts early on, because like you said earlier, you know, it's great that you look at the job results and you made the profit that you stated, but what did you spend to get there? What did you spend before you even started the job? You know, do you know that?
No, most of the time, no, they don't. And I like that, because again, that there, you know, there's a lot of people out there going, oh no, you know, we're doing these new project types, et cetera. And I'm like, yeah, on the bigger projects. But again, it's just a small percentage. If you look at the giant percentages, and those smaller contractors, they don't have that, you know, free con ability. And you're right, it is completely lost. And I had, you know, Tui from Procore on, and he talked about the master builder, that ability. It's this close relationship right now between an architect. Like you said, you're a paper architect. These are builders. You're talking about constructability, that, you know, that flashing detail and waterproofing and the other things you're doing. That's valuable things that are change orders later if you don't do them now.
Exactly.
And that's great to go to an owner and be like, yeah, it's going to cost you $12 million. And then, you know, $2 million in change orders because you forgot things. No. But we managing it, you can't get rid of it, but managing it to a point where you have visibility and understanding and can use the data to chase those clients that are worth it. Like that 16-month project that's called a 4-month project because it's 12 months in pre-con. By the way, we really need to take the pre out of pre-construction and just call it construction.
Exactly.
You know, that's where I thought virtual design and construction was going to take over, and yeah, it was going to be the virtual construction phase. But yeah, you know, all right, yeah, you know, now I'm off my rocker and on my soapbox again, but we won't get there.
I mean, the other thing too is, you know, and having spent, like, and I mentioned this before, spending time in construction tech, there's a lot of amazing solutions out there too. And one thing that I think you're really starting to see is like more integration, interoperability. That term gets like way overused, right? Like people will be like, oh, it's an integration because like this one thing connects to this one thing. I think that like there's a big opportunity in this next phase to really help like do that. Like I've already seen some of the customers using ARM1. They've integrated Salesforce to ARM1 in order to better manage their Salesforce costs. And they have some teams using Salesforce, but not everybody. So like, you know, and then they are integrating to, you know, whatever it is, their CMIC or their Procore, their ERP. And I think that like, there's a big opportunity there. And that's, I think where a lot of these GCs need it. Like they don't need an extra pair of software. They need something that's going to help do what they're doing better, embellish what they're doing, bring things together, make it more seamless, help service more stakeholders. And so I think that's one thing that, you know, I'm excited about and we're excited about to do is like, how can we generally go into a GC and say like, hey, we understand the problems you're trying to solve. We have this solution. Like, how can we help you leverage it along with what you're doing today to just make the whole thing better, you know, faster, more efficient, right? Like no one's interested in something else that's going to just be garbage in, garbage out and not actually move the needle.
It's interesting because you're right. The process that we built most of these products on came from where we felt the problem the most, right? In the field. And then into the office and the project management side of things. But really, if I could go back and I did my time at Join, and Join solved a small portion of what you're talking about as well and got me really passionate about it. And now over at Bluebeam that runs the whole gamut of it all, still passionate about it. And I realized you got to begin with the end in mind. And we just didn't give that props to pre-con at the time. And we're now in this. And I honestly think it had a lot to do with COVID, is that we realized we were virtually building things ahead of time and we were doing all this pre-construction and we could do it all virtually. And that raised some eyebrows of to, whoa, we were doing this in offices together and looking over the cubicle and throwing things at each other. And how did you do that? And where did you find that? And now we didn't have it. And we realized, uh-oh, we're really screwed. Now, cool, Don and you guys had learned that before.
Yeah.
And, you know, never let a good crisis go to waste. Right. So RM1 worked well and found some new things and now is out in the world. So, man, I could talk to you guys about this forever because obviously I love pre-con and I love the process and I love the focus on driving success for the big dogs and all the little ones out there fighting tooth and nail. Because, you know, in this world of that crazy AI, a skill of being able to build, AI is going to do a lot of things, guys, but it's not going to build for us. And it doesn't know what we want. Only we know what we want. And only we can articulate and help the owners build those programs that they're looking for and drive that value all the way through the process. That's always going to be us. Well, listen, again, I could stay on here forever, but Steve, thank you for connecting us and jumping on a call and getting Don here. How can people learn more a little bit about RM1 if they're looking for it?
Go to our website, rm1.com. You can email sales@rm1.com or email me, sbots@rm1.com. And we're very interested in meeting with people that are dealing with, you know, challenges around pre-construction, resource management, and just talking to them about their problems and if we can help solve them, right? Like, I think that's kind of we're trying to take, you know, what our first principles approach to it. But thanks for the time, Jeff. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. And Don, thank you. It's really cool to see somebody come through all of that history and then, you know, turn around and give back in a way that I think is going to make a big, big difference. So thanks for coming on today.
Oh, thanks, Jeff. We appreciate this opportunity to share our experience and our history of what we've done. We're very excited about the product and where we're going to take the product. We've got believe me, a whole list of places we want to go with it and features we want to add. And we have a very robust system, and we just barely touched on the surface of what we've created already. So I can't wait to share it with everybody.
Well, I'm excited, and I know people are going to be going and checking it out. You guys know it'll be in the show notes, so you'll be able to find them both and to find RM1. Thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Don and Steve. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to the show, visit thecontentcrew.com. This is The Content Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.